From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, April 12th, 2017. And on this day, we talk through revolving door laws for legislators who become lobbyists and why some people feel Maine needs to tighten ours. And a project at the University of Southern Maine that looks at how our waterways have shaped Maine history. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the law offices of Joe Bornstein, dedicated to serving injured and disabled Mainers from Kittery to Caribou. JoeBornstein.com. And by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
First tonight, let's look ahead to something that's happening next week in Augusta. That's when the Maine Ethics Commission will take up a proposal that is designed to put some distance between lobbyists on the one hand and elected legislators and state officials on the other. The proposal stems from a complaint against a former Democratic legislator who was hired by the Maine AFL-CIO. We have brought in political correspondent Steve Missler to explain the controversy and, more importantly, the purpose of what are often called revolving door laws. Steve, thanks for joining me.
Of course.
Okay, so first, can you explain what a revolving door is in state government?
So revolving door is kind of a nifty metaphor to explain how legislators and state officials often land jobs at lobbying firms and vice versa. But it doesn't quite capture what the revolving door laws are designed to guard against, and that's the situation where public policy and laws are overly influenced by special interest groups. Too much influence by groups like unions or corporations is always a concern in the legislature and executive branch, and that's why states have created these revolving door laws that basically create a cooling off period between when a legislator or executive branch employee can take a lobbying job after their government paycheck goes away. And so Maine is one of 34 states that have this type of law.
So clearly Maine's not the only state that thinks it's a good idea to have a cooling off period. What do people think that this accomplishes?
So if you're a lobbying firm or a special interest group, access to policymakers can determine whether the issue you're pushing has a chance of becoming law. Now, you can imagine lobbyists standing in the hallways of the state house, pulling lawmakers aside and trying to convince them that this or idea or that is the best thing since sliced bread. But your chances of convincing them is much better if you happen to have real connections and relationships with those same lawmakers. And that's why former legislators and state officials sometimes make for pretty good lobbyists. They often know the people they're trying to influence, and maybe they've even served with them on a committee or a commission or something. And those connections are worth a lot of money to lobbying firms, which is why you see so many former legislators and executive branch employees donning lobbying pins after their government jobs end. And it's also pretty good work for former legislators as well. And that raises another concern, which is legislators or officials sponsoring or drafting policy that could land them a high-paying job after their term or government service ends.
So how common is it at the state level for former lawmakers to get into lobbying?
Well, unlike the federal government, we really don't have any data to track how often this revolving door issue happens. But it's common enough to anyone who's spent any time at the state house to notice that it happens.
The inspiration for this particular controversy is the former Democratic state rep, Adam Good. Where does this leave us with him?
So Good termed out of the legislature last year, and now he's employed by the Maine AFL-CIO, where he's done a lot of things that are considered lobbying under state law. Now, that would appear to be a violation of the revolving door law, but there's a catch. In Maine, only registered lobbyists, and this is important, can violate the revolving door law. And you don't need to register as a lobbyist until you've met a certain threshold of lobbying. So, and that's 8 hours a month. So you can imagine where someone's only lobbying for six or five or whatever, and they don't have to register. And that's kind of what's going on with Adam Good. So despite complaints with Republicans, Good says he hasn't reached that threshold. And until someone proves that he has, he's technically operating in this loophole of the revolving door law.
Is there anything like this happening with any former Republican legislators that Democrats are complaining about?
Well, there was an instance last year where a former LePage official had left the administration and then took up a lobbying job. But she was operating in this similar gray area that Adam Good appears to be doing as well.
Okay, so not a partisan issue then necessarily.
No, it definitely isn't.
The Ethics Commission enforces the lobbying law. How is this all going over with them?
There's a complaint before the commission right now, which alleges that Good has violated this threshold. Nobody's been able to prove that yet, but the commission will review that complaint next Tuesday. In the meantime, Ethics Director Jonathan Wayne has proposed closing this loophole to prohibit all lobbying by former legislators and executive branch employees for a year, whether they're registered lobbyists or not. And if the commission approves that change, it will go to the legislature for consideration, maybe by the end of the year.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks again.
The Cumberland County Sheriff's Office is asking for the public's help in locating a teen who's been missing since Monday. Officials say 16-year-old Lilia Simmons was last seen at the Harpswell Charter School in Brunswick at about 2:30 Monday afternoon. She has no access to a phone or a vehicle. The sheriff's office says Lilia is 5'7" tall, white female with shoulder-length brown hair and brown eyes, who weighs around 125 pounds. Anyone with any information is asked to contact the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office. Legislation that would provide criminal immunity for people calling 911 to report drug overdoses has support from civil liberties advocates in Maine. Supporters of the measure say someone who may have drugs or paraphernalia in their possession may be reluctant to summon help for another person for fear they might be arrested when police arrive. The Maine State Police, however, oppose the proposal. They argue it's too broad and would hamper prosecution of those who should be arrested. Maine State Police Major Brian Scott.
We understand the spirit of the bill is to ensure that if someone needs medical assistance, that we do not discourage a person from calling 911 or otherwise seeking aid for fear that they could be charged with a crime. However, we're concerned that this could have unintended consequences.
The ACLU of Maine says drug use is a public health issue and should be treated as such, and that similar Good Samaritan laws have been passed all over the country. Meanwhile, the American Civil Liberties Union of Maine, along with five other New England ACLU affiliates, has filed a lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security and U.S. Customs and Border Protection over President Trump's travel bans for people from several primarily Muslim countries. ACLU of Maine Director Zachary Hyden says the organization's demanding documentation about the way the CBP instructed local officials to implement President Trump's January 2017 travel ban.
When President Trump issued his Muslim ban executive orders, offices across the country had to implement those orders. They had to know how to carry out those orders at airports or at ports of entry.
ACLUs all over the country made Freedom of Information Act requests in early February, but Hyden says the CBP has a long history of ignoring FOIA requests, and this case was no different. The lawsuits by the New England ACLUs are among 13 across the country, all looking for specific information about local airports and ports of entry. Hyden says the executive orders have been a thinly veiled attempt to keep Muslims out of the country, and he says the public deserves to know how they're being carried out. And finally today, students of theater, music, and art at the University of Southern Maine may share similar areas of creative interest, but they tend to focus on their own form of media. In the past few months, though, that has changed. The students have been collaborating on a theater production that explores how Maine's waterways have shaped its history. The show is called Molded by the Flow. It opens this Friday in Lewiston. Patty White has a preview.
The name Molded by the Flow not only reflects the content of the show, it's also a metaphor for how it was created. It's what's called devised theater, where producers toss aside the typical predetermined script and instead form a show from improvisation and collaboration. It's an approach that senior Cameron Prescott, a major in music performance, was not used to.
I was very apprehensive about the whole thing. I'm kind of, as a performer, I like everything under control and prepared. And it took me time to realize that this isn't that.
Two visiting artists, Paul Drescher and Rindy Eckert, guided the students in creating the show, which is described as a poetic, visual, and musical narrative that explores the relationship between Maine's waterways and its history. Eckert says it's about how streams shaped the landscape and formed rivers, whose power was harnessed by mills, how that water flowed out to the ocean, which has its own power, and created centers of culture and community through its ports.
So it becomes this issue of, say, power that's controlled versus power that's not controlled, which is a very interesting thing aesthetically.
Theater students wrote poetry and dialogue, then handed it to music students who composed songs around those writings. Art students, meanwhile, created instruments to incorporate into the show. During a recent rehearsal, freshman jazz guitar performance major Anthony Branca bends a large plastic sheet.
We use it in one particular piece as an effect for a big wave washing away a boat, but other various sounds too. Like if you bend it on the ground, it makes this kind of whooping sound like this.
There's also an instrument made of chalices that hang by strings from a wooden frame. Junior Hunter McKay, a major in jazz performance, demonstrates.
They all have a pitch that you can get when you hit them. And then the other thing that it does, if there's a chair or something, or there's a ladder right here. So I'm climbing up on this ladder. You can dump metal filings into the top of it, and they fall over the chalices.
And there's an instrument that freshman composition major Noah Franklin refers to as a vertical harp or bass tree. It's a tall wooden post with a round top and square base with 12 strings anchored between the two.
And the idea of this is to kind of emulate a stringed instrument like a violin or a cello or a bass.
Franklin uses a bow to play it.
It mostly just adds an effect and an atmosphere to this because this isn't an instrument that's going to be playing any lead melodies.
There's a certain amount of chaos in creating a collaborative production like this. In the final weeks before the show, students are busily altering music, changing sets, and the script. But sophomore Sagelyn Green, a music ed and composition major, says the chaos has allowed her to see new possibilities from what others have produced as well as herself.
This just changed how I write. I never wrote a jazz piece before this, and then there's a jazz piece that is probably going to be in the show.
Very good.
Thank
jazz
you.
Piece.
Thanks. Yeah, so like it's expanded my own personal composing.
The students say the collaboration has opened up a world right in front of them that they never explored till now. Rindy Eckert says he hopes the audience will have a similar experience.
I like to say that I'd like the audience to be lost, but not so lost that they panic. And by this I mean that if you step off the path and you don't panic, you're likely to get a view of the forest that you didn't have staying on the path.
Molded by the Flow will open this weekend in Lewiston and runs the following two weekends on USM's Gorham campus. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Wednesday, April 12th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.